Hi, this is Dan Melton. Thanks for joining us for this podcast of St. Andrew's Weekly Message. I hope you enjoy it. I encourage you to listen through the words to what God is saying to you, and may the peace of God be known through your life this week. So some of my kids excitedly encouraged our family to watch a Star Wars show on the Disney Plus streaming service called The Mandalorian. As a family, we quickly devoured two seasons of this show, which resembles something between a space opera and a Western. The protagonist is a man who was adopted by a group of people called the Mandalorians after he was orphaned in wartime as a child. These Mandalorians are groups of honorable warriors who wear a special kind of almost invincible space armor with full helmet, which they are never allowed to remove in front of others, so you can't see their faces. The Mandalorian's main character is a bounty hunter who, again himself a Mandalorian, becomes the protector of a vulnerable, gifted child. And when confronted with a decision to make, or when engaging in battle, or when they need to affirm a course of action, the Mandalorians recite their motto. You may have heard it if you've seen the show, "This is the way." And this conjures up, this motto saying, conjures up and reminds them of their deeper story. This is the way. Well, of course, these space adventure characters often have these mottos or slogans that they solemnly recite to one another. But real human cultures have meaningful greetings or words of blessing too. Shalom is a Jewish affirmation that means the whole peace of God, the hesed of God, the everlasting love, the peace of God be with you. Namaste is an Indian saying affirming God's presence in both the recipient and the speaker. And when you think about it, our catch you later doesn't really measure up so much in terms of spiritual content. And it's sort of interesting because our greetings and our goodbyes are often sort of empty in the modern world of any kind of spiritual content. Ancient Israel had all kinds of rituals and liturgies and beliefs that bound them together as a nation and as families. And these centered around their worldview about Yahweh God, who was the creator, who was the giver of the law. Through Moses, that served to bring society together around the memory and worship of God. And when we hear that word law, we think, oh, I was speeding, I might get a ticket. We might think of the law as something that sort of confines us. But in that day and age, when life was so chaotic and unpredictable, having a set of principles by which a society could live their life in an orderly way was considered a blessing. So the law, capital L, was a good thing. The law, capital L, the Ten Commandments that came through Moses and all the codes that came after them, the law was a blessing. And because the world was created by a God who was good and they had the law to guide them, they could celebrate the beauty and glory of life. Life in a holistic way all kind of hung together and worked in a very harmonious way that created abundance. Well, the New Testament scholar N.T. Wright points us to Psalm 19 as an example of the celebration of creation and the law as ancient Israel experienced them. It reads as follows: "The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In the heavens, God has sent a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from his wedding canopy, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens and its circuit to the end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are sure, making the wise simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is clear, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. And the ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold, sweeter also than honey, and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. But who can detect their errors? Clear me from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from the insolent. Do not let them have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. He concludes, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and redeemer. As we look through the psalm, we see that the first six verses speak to how lively and alive creation is. Creation is telling. Creation is pouring forth. Creation is proclaiming the glory of God. And Wright, the scholar, reminds us that we modern people may have actually, this may be a little foreign to us because we may have inherited by default a belief about the world and God from the ancient Greek philosophy called Epicureanism. And there, God is in his heaven up there, having created the world, but has absolutely nothing to do with it, with the workings of the world. But here in the Psalms, creation is speaking, creation is singing, creation is proclaiming, magnifying everything that God has done and is shouting God's presence. The veil between this world and heaven is very thin indeed. When I was first out of seminary and serving in a large church in Texas, I was leading a new member class, and I was inviting the participants in the class to talk about their belief in God and their experiences with God. We were near there in Texas, one of the Air Force bases where Air Force pilots first learned to fly. And they had NATO pilots there as well. There was a NATO complement there. And so a young Dutch pilot was in our group, and he spoke up. He said, when I just know there is a God, it's when I'm flying my plane in the morning and the plane breaks through the cloud canopy and I see the sun shining over the clouds. I think the psalmist would have loved that. In the psalm, as the psalmist is talking and rejoicing over creation, without much transition, he moves right into this poetic praise of God's law. And again, to us, this may seem like two completely different subjects, but to the psalmist, the creation and law are woven together. The beauty and the majesty of God is made known both in creation and the law, and one reflects the other in this harmonious universe that God has created. Both the law and creation manifest the magnificence of God. And because of that, the psalmist, we, don't see the human being as some aimless creature with no purpose, as is the case with much 20th century philosophy and art. A lot of it is very existential. It's very bleak, actually, finding no purpose for human beings whatsoever. And there is an emptiness that comes from that. But here in the psalm, the human being is placed right in the thick of this beauty, this buzzing beauty that's everywhere around him and her. The human being is reveling in the abundance of the creation and the law. So for today, how does this alignment with God's ways, the law, God's principles, and the beauty that God has put around us, how does that enrich our lives? You may already have an answer, but I'm going to take one aspect of the celebration of the law in the psalm, because the psalmist says the law rejoices the heart. The law rejoices the heart. Does it make a difference during a pandemic to have a joyful heart? I think it could. How do you do that? How do you cultivate joy in your life? There may be some simple things, some practices that we can adopt. Here is what Melanie Curtin, author of an article on neuroscience, says about happiness. She writes, recent studies have shown that doing this one thing can add years to a person's life, and it's an accurate prediction of how fulfilling their marriage will be. What is this magic elixir? A smile. Smiling has truly remarkable effects. First, doing it actually makes you feel good, even if you're not feeling good in the moment. A 2009 MRI study demonstrated conclusively that the brain's happiness circuitry is activated when you smile, regardless of your current mood. If you're down, smiling actually prompts your brain to produce feel-good hormones. Smiling, she continues, is also a predictor of longevity. In a 2010 study, researchers looked at Major League Baseball cards. Fascinating things that researchers do. Major League Baseball card photos from 1952. They found that the span of a player's smile actually predicted his lifespan. Unsmiling players lived 72.9 years on average, while beaming players lived a full 7 years longer. Similarly, a 30-year-old study out of UC Berkeley, examined the smiles of students in an old yearbook with almost spooky results. The width of the students' smiles turned out to be accurate predictors of how high their standardized tests of happiness would be, how inspiring others would find them, even how fulfilling their marriages would end up. Those with the biggest smiles came up on top in all the rankings. So, where do you stack up when it comes to smiling? She writes, know this, under 14% of us smile fewer than 5 times a day. Over 30% of us smile over 20 times a day. And there's one group that absolutely dominates the smiling category with as many as 400 smiles a day, children. So there you have it. Smiling makes you feel good, makes you look good, gets you a better marriage in the end, and it seems like smiling is something to smile about. This one small example demonstrates the abundance that flows from living in celebration. So simple, so easy. So easy, we live in abundance. And the psalmist says, when you take in the abundance around you in terms of creation and following God's ways, your heart will be happier. You'll be smiling. And we see all the benefits that come from that. See how there's this internal wisdom to the scriptures and the psalms that you tease it out. It's so simple to see the trajectory there. It's so simple, and yet for many of us human beings, hard to do. Well, we could go on with the psalm. We could talk about how the radiance of the law continues on into the New Testament, where Christ becomes the living embodiment of the heart of the law and fulfills the law. As N.T. Wright does, we could see how the lights in the sky, the stars, find their fulfilling end in the revelation. They were always meant to be symbols pointing to a greater light. Their brilliance is fulfilled as their job is completed in the revelation, as the new heaven and earth descend from heaven, and then from there on, it will be the glory of God that lights the new world all the time. But maybe just for this morning, we could simply ask the question, are we rooted in God's ways? In Christ's teachings, in a world that we honor as God's beautiful creation. In the book of Isaiah, we read, and when you turn to the right, or when you turn to the left, your ear shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. We are reminded that there is a deeper story that we are connected to, and there is a power in following that way. Are you walking in this way? Are you basking in? Are you delighting in the world and the principles embedded into this reality that make life sing? So wherever you are, take a moment. Perhaps close your eyes if you like. Try to be still. Ask yourself a couple questions. Check in a little bit. What is weighing on you today? What is weighing on you? And are you smiling? Are you delighting? Or have you lost some of that? What brings you joy in your life? Whatever that is that something you can trace back to God's presence in creation? In the silence of your heart, take a moment and invite God to take that burden from you. Invite God to remind you of God's goodness and love and all the beauty that God has placed around you. Take a moment, take a breath, and exercise gratitude. Say thank you in the name of Christ. Amen.